Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope you and yours are keeping safe and sound and everything else. I'm recording on Thursday evening, not long after our 1-0 defeat to Olympiacos. How long? Well, long enough for the defeat to digest, but also for Tottenham to get knocked out of Europe in extra time, having taken a 2-goal lead into their second leg. It is, as the man says,
it's the history of the Tottenham.
And as the very wise woman once sang,
and it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
So there you go. There's a nice, bright way to start this particular episode of the Arscast with me to discuss the Arsenal game, but first to talk about what happened to Tottenham. We have to. It's Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
What a goodly evening it is.
It is a goodly evening. Yes, you can co-opt that phrase for this evening.
Yeah, why not?
Why not, indeed. Yeah. Look, is it not the most Tottenham thing of all time to lose the North London derby and then go on and blow a 2-goal lead in Europe to a team whose coach was sent to prison this week? Was it this week or I can't remember, but he's in prison.
It was this week, yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, honestly, I mean, it's the type of game that you might imagine you'd cock up if you were like against the backdrop of a really raucous crowd or something, but yeah, with literally nobody there. it's hilarious.
Look, I know we're guilty of it ourselves as a club. You know, we're guilty of making things difficult for ourselves. That's the way we like to phrase it. We don't like to do things the easy way. But like, regardless of what we do, however long we try, if we went to university to get a master's degree in fucking things up, we could not even dream of coming close to the things that they do.
It's so good, and it's just sort of multiplied by the fact that it's Mourinho in
yes.
charge. You know, he's had such a terrible week. There've got to be massive questions about his future at the club. And the one thing that Dan Levy isn't going to want to do is get rid of him, because he spent so much money bringing him in. And I don't know a single Tottenham fan who likes him or likes the football that they play with him. It's just such a wonderful thing.
It's kind of funny you should say that, because I just happened to look on Twitter this evening. You know, James was talking about the Tottenham fans that he knows after the North London. I don't know any. I just don't know any. There aren't many here in Ireland. There's about 5, I think, in total. But I looked on Twitter just to see what the story was, how people were feeling about it. And there is a fair amount of Jose out stuff. For example, watching the game with my daughter, and she just said, "Life is too short for this." She's 8. another absolutely disgraceful, completely unacceptable, an absolute, complete, and utter shambles, shameful. There are not enough words to describe that from Spurs. Not good enough. Come on, you Spurs. And then also Mourinho out. Another one. I expect to be seeing an alert come through tomorrow notifying me Mourinho has finally been given the fucking boot. Hashtag Mourinho out. If Maureen don't walk away, then we are in the presence of the greediest piece of shit known in football. The bloke's poisonous. The fact that he has any faith in Dyer is proof of that. Hashtag Mourinho out. Another one. If he survives the night, I'll be even more monumentally fucked off than I already am. The man is a fucking disgrace. Worst Spurs manager since Gross. Hashtag Mourinho out. Another one. The football might be boring, but at least he'll win us trophies. Oh. Hashtag Mourinho out. And get that prick out of our club and about 11 players with him. I want our club back. And with this clown in charge and players who aren't even good enough for the championship, we have no chance. Joke club. Hashtag Mourinho out. And the creme de la creme, the final one from this one. Jose Mourinho couldn't motivate a cokehead to do a line off Margot Robbie's arsehole. Which, you know, is... I don't quite know. Hashtag Mourinho out, by the way. I mean, that would be difficult in any circumstances, regardless of whose arsehole you were trying to snort coke off. But I kind of see where he was coming from, but he got a little bit mixed up there. I guess it's the anger and frustration that got to him.
I think we could just end the podcast there, can't we?
Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, dear.
My goodness. I mean, it does incredibly soften the blow of, you know, okay, the blow is probably a bit too much overstating it in terms of what happened to us, and we lost the game, and losing a game is never good, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there might have been greater frustrations had we lost the game and also gone out. We lost and we've gone through. So, you know, by that standards, we're in a good place, even though we couldn't score ourselves tonight. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was pretty miffed when the final whistle went at the Emirates. I was a bit like, well, that's just annoying. And, you know, we were exchanging messages and I was focusing on doing the post-match stuff. And I was like, you know, I better not tune into the Spurs. I've got to do the Arteta quotes and stuff.
Yeah.
But then you messaged me to say that they were losing. And I was suddenly like, smile on my face. Everything is better. Doesn't matter. The sky is blue tomorrow. We're all going to have a lovely weekend. It's great. Yeah. No, I mean, look, I don't really know where their season goes from here. I think they've got the League Cup final, which will basically be one of the last games of the season, won't it? Because it's been delayed. So hopefully City will do them over in that.
Right.
And then they won't even have, well, they probably won't have any form of European football.
I mean, do you get into the European football if you win the EFL, the Carabao Cup? I mean, what?
Well, yeah, you'd get into the Europa Conference League.
I mean, there's part of me that while I wouldn't enjoy
that, yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily enjoy their, you know, I mean, see, that's the thing about the League Cup. You know, you can win it and you still can't say you've won a major trophy, can you? Because people are like, well, the FA Cup is just about a major trophy these days. People, even Arsenal fans have gone like, FA Cup, you know, we don't need to win any more of those. We've won enough of them. I'm not saying I'm one of them. I love the FA Cup. I think it's great. But there are some who go, yeah, that, you know, that's not good enough for a club like Arsenal, which is fair enough if you hold that opinion. Whereas you can't even make that case with the League Cup. You can't say, well, at last we put an end to our trophyless years. I mean, it is a trophy, but it's sort of like, you know, the kid in school who comes last in every race and they give him an egg cup or something just to make him feel special. It's a bit like that.
It's the tournament that Man City just used to kind of warm up. You know, it's sort of a, you know, it's a nothing for everybody else. They just go at it and then kind of keep themselves ticking over until they go for something that really matters. But yeah, look, I mean, it's been a good night for Arsenal, even though it's been a sort of bad night for Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, let's broaden it out a bit then, as we turn our attention away from the history of the Tottenham to Arsenal. You know, it wasn't a great night, but can we say, and I think we can actually, it's been a good week. It has been a good week for Arsenal. You know, we did what we needed to do over there. We didn't do well tonight, but, you know, the aim is to qualify for the next stage of the competition. We did that, and in the middle of it, sandwiched between that was a North London derby win, and it's hard not to think that, you know, even though the player who didn't play in the North London derby and had all the chances to score tonight didn't take them, and, you know, he wasn't there. But it felt very much like a performance that was influenced by the effort that we put in on Sunday.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, Arteta kind of referenced that. He was directly asked a question whether he thought, you know, fatigue was a part, and he did point out that, you know, he made five changes and that really the fatigue shouldn't have been an issue. But I just think psychologically, when you've got that advantage, it is so, so difficult for the players to compartmentalize what they're supposed to be doing on the pitch. Like, we obviously got very, very nervous at the first sight of Olympiacos really going for us. And that was something that you know, was a bit of a hangover from those last 15 minutes of the weekend as well. And it's a bad habit to get into, because really what you want from an Arsenal team with an advantage like that against a side who they're all right, Olympiacos, they're not great. You want them to just, you just want us to go at them from the off, get an early goal, kill the game. And I guess, you know, tonight really was a case of some bad decision making on the ball and some bad finishing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was
peppered all the way through.
That was the interesting thing, because I did watch the Arteta post-game interview, and you can look at the chances that we had, and we had really good chances to score goals. There was the Aubameyang one early on that he put over the bar. There was the Aubameyang one when he was clean through on goal. There was the Martin Odegaard one where, you know, he spooned it over the bar as well after making a good space to shoot. There was the Pepe one, which I think he was unlucky with. I think that was going in, but it hit Emile Smith Rowe. There was the other Aubameyang one late on, which was a, you know, a really clever flick in fairness and a good save from the goalkeeper. But then he followed it up by, you know, hooking the ball over the bar from 3 inches. So, you know, he kind of it sort of summed up his night in a way. And I was expecting Arteta to be a bit more, look, you know, we've got to take these chances. It's a theme that he has explored more than once this season, the finishing. But he talked about the decision-making and giving away the ball cheaply and not doing what we should do with the ball. And I think that's interesting, and I think he's right in a way, because, you know, if you weren't making chances, you could say, well, look, that's a big problem. But when you are making the chances, you know, you can improve that quite easily by just being a bit more effective, like very slightly more effective in front of goal would lead to goals, you know, given the general quality of Aubameyang. But, you know, you can't control games properly when you give the ball away the way we gave the ball away, and you can put pressure on the opposition much more easily and readily when you're secure. And like, it was quite interesting that after he conceded, he took off Ceballos and Elneny, and I completely understood why he did that. And there was this little bump, and I think Odegaard had a positive influence, but then Thomas Partey came on and was like just as bad as Elneny or Ceballos, and that kind of impacted the way those final stages of the game went.
Yeah, I mean, Partey had about a 5-10 minute spell where he gave the ball away, I don't know, 2-3 times, and he gave away another one of those silly fouls on the edge of the box, which was kind of really frustrating. And he kind of looked like a guy who didn't really want the ball for a couple of minutes, and then he sort of settled down again. I mean, obviously, we were lucky that they went down to 10 men with those final few minutes as well. Ceballos, he created two chances right in the first half. There was the first one where Pepe just nicked it past the keeper, and then the ball dribbled past the post after it took a deflection. And then he also set up Aubameyang for that really good chance. And in that respect, his positional play and his being in the number 10 position, and, you know, you can't ask for too much more, created two chances. But almost every time he got the ball, I did feel like he was maybe holding on to it for just a split second too long. He takes an extra touch. And obviously in their goal, that's exactly what happened. It was a bit, I mean, I don't want to, it's maybe a bit far-fetched to say it's a similar situation to the Burnley goal that we conceded, but it was Ceballos getting caught on the ball and then suddenly a turnover.
Yeah.
Within a few seconds, the ball's in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know he's better than that, because he's had, this is like the third time he's come on, and you think back to the Benfica game as well when he had that mistake and cost us a goal. So that's three goals that have come from individual errors there. Yeah, I mean, he's had a bad run of luck, and I get the feeling now that, you know, he doesn't necessarily see his long-term future at Arsenal past this season, so he's sort of running out of time to make an impact at this point.
Not checked out. Yeah, I know what you mean.
No, not checked out, but he's kind of, he looks visibly frustrated that he can't, you know, he's not kind of being trusted to be the big guy. And I feel like that's taking a toll on his confidence. And then when he's on the pitch, he's making mistakes. And he's just not going for him at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he was brought in to play the Odegaard role tonight. And I thought he started pretty brightly. And he did make that chance for Aubameyang that you know, should have been an assist to his name. It should have been a goal for Aubameyang. But I don't know what it is about the legs of Danny Ceballos. They just do not work the way that they should, or the way that a professional footballer's legs should work. He seems to run like it's like someone's put lead boots on him or whatever it is. When Odegaard comes on, you can see the difference in how quickly he moves, how lightly he steps. And Ceballos is he trudges around the pitch. You know, I don't know if he's got an injury or if that's just kind of who he is. We've seen that a fair bit from him. And look, there was more to the goal as well, in fairness. It was a bad decision on his part because we had a good break on and he dallied. He took too many touches. That's another flaw in his game. But, you know, I don't think we defensively covered ourselves in glory either.
No, I mean, what we were backtracking and Luiz kind of allowed the guy to cut in onto his right foot. I mean, I've lost count of the number of times that balls seem to deflect off our players and go straight past the goalkeeper. And in that respect, Leno was pretty unlucky. But yeah, I mean, it really felt like we needed to go to the player to stop him from doing that. I mean, this bloke's, it's the third goal he scored against us in four games.
He must love playing against us.
It's like the new Drogba. so yeah, I mean, that was enough to make me sort of shout at the TV. I was angry, you know, and at that point I did feel like we were a bit on the rocks. And, you know, Arteta, when he made those changes, I mean, he really wasted no time. They were very much the type of change that I think any supporter on, you know, following the game would have made. He was like, those two are not doing what I need them to do. I'm going to send on two better players. And yeah, I mean, I thought Odegaard was good, you know, I think, he really does bring something, a level of control to games. I'm really impressed by him. And, you know, when you compare him to some other players who've come into the club in a January window, I mean, it's really, really impressive that he's hit the ground running.
Yeah.
You know, having never played in England and not even really with that huge amount of experience in Spain. I mean, I know he's done well in Holland and stuff.
Yeah, he did well in his loan spells. I mean, wherever he's gone, he's done pretty well on loan, which I think is... you know, as a testament to the quality of the player and the fact that we're all sitting here and we can all see an Arsenal future with Martin Odegaard as part of it. You know, it's really easy to see that, you know, the sort of, the impact he has made as a player when he's come in has been really obvious. And, you know, I want, Arsenal to make an attempt to sign him. I mean, the thing about it is you look at Ceballos and he's talked about like how he wants to go back to Spain and how he wants to be a Real Madrid player, and I'm looking at him going, that's not going to happen. Like, it's, you're not going to be a Real Madrid player. I can see why, you know, you're out on loan with us for a couple of years, but I can also see that he's not going to be a guy who does what we need one of our midfield players to do, you know. So he's in a weird position, Ceballos, in that he probably knows now, you know, he's not a regular in the team. He's not playing particularly well. His numbers don't really convince. You know, Arsenal with limited funds are not going to go out of their way to sign Danny Ceballos, whereas Martin Odegaard is definitely somebody that, you know, if we can make it happen, we should try and make it happen. The problem, of course, is the better he plays, the more likely it is that Real Madrid might want him to stay. And that's one of the challenges that we're going to have to face, isn't it? That, you know, I'm hoping behind the scenes that there are conversations. I mean, Arteta clearly loves him, like really likes him. You can see that, and you know, when Arteta likes a player and when he's sort of not indifferent, but when he's not quite convinced by a player, that's obvious too. He likes Martin Odegaard a lot. So, I mean, the one thing that we have going for us is this, his presence and the ability to have conversations with him, the ability to sort of sell him on a project and say, look, you could be the linchpin, the attacking creative linchpin of this team, of this club going forward. You know, how about it? How likely it is, I don't quite know, but I'm, based on what I've seen of him, absolutely convinced that we should be doing everything we can this summer to bring him in on a permanent basis.
Yeah, I think Arteta sees a bit of himself in Odegaard, actually. There's something about, you know, the fact that he kind of left his home country at a young age to go and establish himself somewhere else. You know, the fact that there's that Sociedad link, the fact that, you know, a young Arteta was very much a kind of attacking midfielder, someone who played in that similar role. You know, he'd carry the ball, he'd shoot, he was an attacking threat. It's something about the way the guy carries himself. You know, you see him pushing the high press, his arms are up, he's beckoning his teammates, he's pointing them around. There's that leadership quality that he just keeps on banging about. And look, I mean, it's interesting. Almost every one of these Europa League press conferences that come up before and after the games, you get the continental press asking the same question, which is, how impressed are you by Merten Ødegaard?
Well, it's the Norwegian press. I mean,
it's the Norwegian press. I mean, they love asking that question. And every week, you know, Arteta is, you know, gushing in his praise for the young lad. And, you know, given that he's not always that way with a lot of players, you know, he quite often kind of is keen to tell people to get their head down, focus on the basics, you know, they can always improve and all the rest of it. He really likes him, really likes him.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I really don't blame him. And I think it hadn't occurred to me, you know, that Arteta might see a bit of himself in Odegaard, because I think a lot of people just remember Arteta as the guy who played as a, you know, slotted back in as a defensive midfielder for Arsenal when he arrived. I mean, he was, what, 29, I think, when he arrived at the club. So he was sort of heading into the September of his career anyway. But at Everton and in Scotland as well, you know, he was an attacking player. He played and he was creative and he scored goals and he took free kicks and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And if there's a good connection between Arteta and Odegaard, then it increases our chances of making something happen, or at least for Odegaard to want it to happen. Whether the clubs can come to an arrangement or not, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think Real Madrid would be in a very good position to kind of ask for a big fee. The good thing that we have going for us is the fact that I don't think he's earning very much money at all at the moment. You know, he's on the wages that he signed when he was 16. So he's on about £20,000-£25,000 a week, which makes him one of the, you know, he'd be one of the lowest earners in the Arsenal squad at the moment. So there's room for us to offer him a bumper contract there, which actually maybe Real Madrid wouldn't. But yeah, I do think that with every game that goes past and the impact and every quote in the Norwegian papers that talks about how good he is, the price is going up bit by bit.
Just to interrupt here, we've got some breaking news. Jose Mourinho, what I feel goes much further than sadness. Jose Mourinho lays into his players' attitude. If I forget the last 10 minutes of extra time where we did something to get a different result and go through, in the 90 minutes and in the first half of extra time, there was one team that decided to leave everything on the pitch. They left everything there, sweat, energy, blood, and at the end of the game, they left even tears of happiness. Very humble, very committed. I have to praise them. He's talking about Dinamo Zagreb, of course. On the other side, my team, I repeat, my team, I am there. It didn't look like it was playing an important match. It's happening, Andrew. It's happening. Third season syndrome is happening right before our eyes.
I saw that David Ornstein has tweeted. He says, there's no break clause in the 3.5-year contract that Jose Mourinho signed in November 2019 to become Tottenham manager. And he's among the best paid coaches in world football. So if THFC sack him before deal expires in summer 2023, he'll be entitled to a major payout.
Oh, wow. Lovely. They're going to have to pawn one end of the stadium. Funny.
Anyway,
let's get back to us and let's talk a little bit about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, because, you know, he's been in the news this week, in fairness. Missed the North London derby. I guess we were looking for him to provide a response tonight. I'm guessing that's what Mikel Arteta was looking for as well. He picked him. That draws a line completely under everything that came before. Do you get any sense that maybe, you know, there was, I don't want to say pressure, you know, because he's a very experienced player and he's been there, done that, and there's very little that, you know, hasn't happened to him in his career that would be unusual for him. But, you know, I'm not going to say he was trying too hard to score. Maybe he wasn't trying hard enough to score. Maybe he was a little too casual on a couple of occasions. But what do you make of his performance? Do you feel like it was any way impacted by what happened at the weekend?
He looked a bit edgy, didn't he? I mean, the ball bounced off him a couple of times in his hold-up play, which isn't wholly unusual for Aubameyang, given he's not the world's greatest kind of, you know, with his back to goal. But he didn't quite look himself. He had that anxious look on his face, and he seemed like he wasn't willing to forgive himself when he missed the chances. Mm. You know, when Aubameyang scores an early goal, you get a completely different Aubameyang sometimes.
Yeah.
And this season, more than most, he's always kind of looked like he's teetering on the edge of a good or a bad performance. I mean, look, I think the worst miss was probably the first one.
It was,
I genuinely thought, like, you know, he could go anywhere with the ball there and he's kind of spooned it over. The one where I think Ødegaard played him through and he was racing through on goal and he tried the dink over the keeper. Mm. I mean, he tried the right thing, but it was just at that point on the evening, having done what he'd done, I was kind of like, he's going to miss here.
I think he just got the line of his run a little bit wrong there. You know, I think he could easily have gone a different direction or taken that slightly differently. I mean, it's a difficult skill. We saw him score a similar kind of goal, didn't we, in the FA Cup final. It was that kind of thing where he dinked the ball over the goalkeeper. Yeah. But, you know, he could also just sort of open himself up and have a shot on his left foot if he wants. He's good enough to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he got away from the guy quite easily. I mean, when he was racing through on goal, and it was, you know, he could have done anything he wanted to. He could have gone early, but he obviously fancied himself to do what was probably the hardest finish, the dink over the keeper. And just not quite as nice. I mean, as you said earlier, he was pretty unlucky with the back heeled attempt from the Martinelli cross. And then,
I mean, that was great. I mean, that was a brilliant attempt, in fairness, considering where the ball was. I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. So, the keeper's kind of had a good evening in that respect and managed to keep him out. But I do worry sometimes about him, though, because you do feel like sometimes he misses an early chance, and then, you know, particularly this season, he misses an early chance and it feels like it's playing on his mind. So I don't know that the weekend and being dropped and all the rest of it particularly helps that. But, I didn't not back Arteta in the decision there. I was quite happy for him to make the decision he made. I don't know whether he's going off on international break and whether he's going to get a chance to sort of recharge his batteries a bit. I don't quite know.
I mean, I think I was talking to this on the preview podcast to Lewis, in that Gabon are playing in two red zone countries. So I'm not sure it's possible for him to go and play for them during the international break. So he might get some time off. I think it's quite interesting because you get a lot of talk about how, you know, Aubameyang isn't the right guy at centre forward for us, but, you know, he had the chances tonight. I mean, those were gilt-edged chances to score goals that normally you would expect him to score at least one of. And I know this isn't the first time that we've said that this season and of late, that normally you would expect him to score those chances. But I thought, you know, if you're leaving those misses aside, I'm not going to say he played well, but there were moments where his centre-forward play was pretty good. He played a good ball into Pepe. I don't think Pepe made the most of it on the break at one point, maybe early in the or late in the first half as well. So, you know, there is the argument or the counterpoint that, look, he didn't take the chances, but he was there to be on the end of those opportunities. So a bad night in front of goal rather than a bad night as an all-round centre-forward, if you like.
Yeah, I think he probably suffered a little bit for maybe lacking the automatisms with some of the players around him. Like, I don't think he's... I mean, I know that Ceballos set up one effort and stuff, but I don't know that there was necessarily the same kind of connection there that he maybe has with a Saka. Yeah, I mean, the team as a whole really didn't click into sort of fourth or fifth gear today, and still we created some chances. Do you not worry about the fact that we have games where we just miss all these chances all the time?
Yeah,
I mean,
of course,
you know, it's costing us a lot this season, and it's a problem that we really, really, really need to rectify, because it's quite possible that in a game, you know, maybe even in the next round, you know, the fine margins are going to decide things, and we just can't keep doing this.
No, I mean, it is a recurring theme this season. You know, if Arteta wants to focus on our lack of security in possession or making the wrong decisions in possession, I'm okay with that. I think that's something that, you know, he can improve and he can work on the training ground. But missing the amount of chances that we miss, it is a bit of an issue. I mean, you even think back to the first game against Olympiacos, and we scored three absolutely brilliant goals, and I'm not trying to take anything away from those whatsoever. Odegaard's goal is brilliant. Gabriel's header is brilliant. Elneny's goal is brilliant. But you think about the Odegaard chance early on, where he put it on Kieran Tierney, I think, or Smith, or I can't remember, one of them just put it on a plate for him and he whiffed it wide. You know, similar position from the one that he scored at the weekend, of course, against Spurs, who we beat 2-1 in the North London Derby. Just a reminder of that, by the way. You know, but you're right, it is an issue. And I think there is probably, you know, in the long or in the medium to long term plans, there's got to be some thinking about how we become more clinical up front. And, you know, I think we're better, in fairness. We're better now than we were a few months ago. There's no question about that. But it is a weakness. It's a weakness in our play. And because it has so much impact on game state. You know what I mean?
Mm.
In that, like, oh, you miss a couple of chances, and then you let the first shot in. And all of a sudden, your head's all over the place because you played well, you've made the chances, you haven't taken them, and you're behind. It makes a difference. Whereas if you go out and you make a chance, you score a chance, make a chance, score a chance, you're 2-0 up, and all of a sudden you're completely in control of a game. So your ability to make the right decisions and make the right passes and to, you know, to do what you need to do to the opposition in that sense. Like, you can sit off, you can let them have the ball, you can hit them on the break. You know, all of those things are impacted by the chances that you miss. So I think it's really, it is an issue that I'm sure Arteta is not necessarily tearing his hair out over, but certainly giving serious consideration to about, you know, as he thinks about where we go for the rest of this season, maybe, but certainly next season, and how you improve that, you know?
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty hard for him to tear that hair out.
Probably. It is hard and plastic, as we know. But, I mean, look, we did get a side of the lesser-spotted Gabriel Martinelli tonight.
Yeah.
Which was both interesting and effective. I mean, he was involved in the red card incident. Certainly a foul. And were the commentators not in the ground?
No, they weren't. That's the thing. I think quite often what you're finding now is that with a lot of these games, that the commentators are just doing it from a studio somewhere, because they obviously got this idea that the guy had thrown the ball
at Martinelli. Yeah.
And it just that was not the case, but they hadn't seen a replay. And they just took a guess and got it wrong and looked like idiots.
But why aren't they in the ground? I mean, I know that are Sky's commentators in the grounds at the weekend? Is like Martin Tyler and those, are they in the grounds? Is it only for Premier League games? I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of the time, and I've worked in places like Setanta Sports, for example, where the voiceover booth in there, when I used to go in and do voiceovers, you know, there'd be a guy watching the game, you know, watching a French football game and commentating on the game from inside the voiceover booth. You know, he's not at the game. We all know that that's the case. But I just would have thought that, like, if Martin Keown and Karen Carney and the presenter are in the ground, why aren't the commentators?
So I think what's happened is when the restrictions really tightened up in the UK around Christmas time, and it became almost impossible, you know, it became pointless to send reporters to away games, for example. Like, you're not going to send a guy to go and commentate on, let's say, Milan v Man United at the moment.
Yeah, sure, because
And I feel like they must have got to a point where they were sending people to some games, and then they thought, well, actually, why don't we just save the money and just have everybody sit in the studio?
You still got to pay the guy to do the job. Like, you know, it's they're all, yeah, I don't know. I think it's weird. But clearly they weren't there, because they were saying, oh, he's punched the ball and it's hit Martinelli, and oh my goodness, oh wow. And then they showed a replay of it. It didn't go anywhere near him.
I think, was it Steve Sidwell on commentary? He was so sure as well. He was just like, oh, well, you know. Yeah. Very weird.
It was very weird. And look, it's nice, in fairness, that the opposition, for once, the recipients of a ludicrous red card. Because that's not, I mean, maybe by the letter of the law, it's a show of dissent and he's knocked the ball away or whatever. But, like, that's a ridiculous red card.
I mean, I thought it was relatively harsh booking him for the arm on Martinelli. You know, I thought, well, that's harsh. But then he really, I mean, the poor bloke was left in tears in the tunnel. I mean, he was absolutely devastated. And you just thought, oh, that, I mean, I felt like, that seems pretty unfair. And there's me as a football fan, completely partisan, desperate for Arsenal to hold out. I don't want them to be with 11 men. Although, having said that, we were so terrible against 10 men the other day that, you know, I knew things were going to potentially still be sticky. I felt really sorry for the bloke. That was a really, really harsh decision. But, they're quite rigid, some of these European referees in these competitions.
It was harsh, but I didn't feel in any way sorry for him. That's where we differ on this one. I saw him in the tunnel and I saw him like holding his shirt up to his eyes, and I'm not sure he was crying per se. And I was like, whatever, guy, hard luck. I mean, that's a harsh red card, but I don't feel sorry for you at all. I just don't have it in me, really. Sorry.
God, heartless, aren't you?
Well, look, you know, I want all of our Arsenal lives to be as easy as possible. And if this makes our life a little bit easier, and to be fair, we were a little bit better with 10 men than we were with 10 men against Tottenham. A little bit, not much, but a little bit, sufficiently better. I mean, you have an extra man. It's like, Christ, you can just pass the ball around them if you really want to. Just create the overloads in the triangles and just pass them out of the game. Instead, we sort of boot it long, we sit deep, and it's like, well, we've got an extra man in defense now. No, guys, it's not how it works. Push up the field a bit and like make the most of that advantage. There's another training session for Arteta to work on over the interlull, the 10v11 sessions.
Yeah, I mean, we're so used to being the ones who went down to 10 men historically, weren't we? You know, under the Arsene Wenger, we always were down to 10 men, but spinning it the other way, I thought going back to the Martinelli thing, he came on and he created a chance and he, you know, ran around and showed pace. And I always get excited when he comes on. Always hopeful, because there's a bit of me that thinks he can bring something to the team that we don't have. And it has been frustrating, and I do wonder why he's not necessarily got the game time. And I know that, you know, we've been playing with very technical players who are kind of more midfielder in their kind of outlook on the game, out on the flanks and stuff. But I just, how do you fit him in if that's what your preference is? I'm kind of, I get slightly concerned that there isn't going to be a place for him.
Well, I think it might be at centre forward. I think ultimately that's where he's going to play. I do. I think that's where they're going to look to use him. And I wonder, like I was saying on the blog today, I just wonder if there's a bit of fine tuning going on in terms of the coaching that he's getting. You know, look, Smith Rowe and Martinelli, very, very different players. You know, Smith Rowe and Willian, or whoever you put out there on the left-hand side, very different players. If Arteta wants that technical player out there for most of a game, you know, I can see why he starts with that. There may be moments in games where he wants something different from there, and that's where we could use Martinelli. But, you know, look, I've said before, I'm not quite as antsy as some people, but I like you, I just like watching him. There's something about this guy when he comes on, the energy, the quality that he has. He was on the pitch, 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and he creates that brilliant chance for Aubameyang.
Yeah.
You know, he makes things happen. That is what he does. And I need to see a bit more of him. I think we all need to see a bit more of him. But I don't, at the same time, think that he's somebody that Arteta doesn't like or doesn't have any faith in. I think there's probably just something of a longer game going on that we're not necessarily aware of. And Arteta isn't particularly forthcoming about what he's planning and what he's thinking about certain things, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed a kind of, there's a bit of a pattern sometimes when players are sort of signed up to longer deals. He doesn't mind taking the risk with dropping them, you know.
He did it with Saka, didn't he, last season?
He did it with Saka last season. I think now that he's pinned down Rob Holding, he doesn't necessarily feel like he has to feel too guilty about the fact that he's had a long run and now he can drop him for a bit. You know, Martinelli's potentially another one, obviously got got the new deal in the summer. And maybe there's just a sort of, he's sort of just, he's weighing up all of the risks and, you know, all of the off-field stuff. And how do you persuade people to play or sign up for new deals and all the rest of it? I guess it's very difficult being a manager, isn't it? All of that kind of stuff you don't see on a day-to-day basis.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot goes on behind the scenes, and, you know, we get one version of things, you know, in press conferences or what we see week in, week out, and we can make our own conclusions and jump to our own conclusions at times. But, you know, Martinelli is still only 19. He's got a long contract with us. We wouldn't have given him that long contract if there wasn't a plan for him. That's where my little flag of hope lies. So we'll see. So look, I mean, anything else in particular from the game that stood out for you or from the performance? I mean, I think there were some tired legs out there.
Yeah, I know that they referenced Tierney looking a little bit tired, jogging back, but I do think that he just sometimes naturally looks quite tired as an individual. I thought Bellerin had a sort of interesting game in the first half where he was sort of trying to make things happen, but couldn't quite. I mean, he's obviously, I've been really impressed with Cedric, let's say, in the last few weeks. Not to the point where I think Cedric's, you know, a world beater or anything, but he's definitely performing at a level that I wasn't sure that he was going to reach. And he is providing very reasonable competition to Bellerin. Really interesting, obviously, that he got the nod for the North London Derby ahead of Hector. So, I mean, you know, I guess we're kind of looking to the future, like, for more deals like that for other positions.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think of the way that the fullbacks were told to play? Because, you know, Smith Rowe and Tierney combine really well. We're not sure that Pepe and Bellerin combine quite as well, but it was interesting to look at the stats after the game. And I don't think Bellerin really overlapped at all. When you think about the way he played in the first game, and he got forward really well, he was quite good from an attacking perspective, but didn't get forward at all in this game. Now, whether that was down to instruction, whether that was down to the way Olympiacos played, I don't quite know. But even Tierney didn't really overlap as much as he normally does. You know, so maybe there was the instruction from Arteta not to do that. But Tierney made 6 clearances in the game. Bellerin made 6 clearances in the game. Gabriel made 8 clearances in the game. I think Luiz also made 6 clearances in the game. So he was expecting something from Olympiacos. And that maybe had an impact on the way he asked his fullbacks to perform.
Yeah. I mean, who do you think he'll select at West Ham on Sunday? Do you think Bellerin will keep his place, or do you think he'll go with Cedric again? I mean, I assume Tierney will play. I mean, he always does.
I assume he will. I think he'll go for Cedric. I'm curious because I thought tonight might be a game in which he could, because I think Luiz was iffy. You know, he had one of those iffy games that didn't particularly cost us the goal. It wasn't like a massive Luiz mistake that cost us the goal, but, you know, he wasn't great for that chance in the first half when the keeper just pumped a long ball downfield and all of a sudden we were opened up all over the place. You know, that was not good. And I think Luiz has got to manage his defensive line better than that. But he did make a couple of block shots and what have you. But it just felt to me like his performance was very, very informed by the schedule and how often he's played of late. So I was a little bit surprised that he didn't change one of his center half. So I'm not 100% sure what he's going to do. It might depend on what people are doing during the international break. I mean, Holding's not going anywhere. Pablo Marie's not going anywhere. Cedric is going away. I don't quite know what he's going to do. It wouldn't surprise me if he picked Cedric for Sunday. But it depends.
There's a bit of me that thinks he might put Pablo Marie in if they've got kind of Suchek and Antonio and potentially. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. I quite like what Pablo Marie has offered this season. I think, you know, Arteta's managed him quite well, bringing him in and out of games seemingly because of, you know, his specificity, as it were. He's tried to make sure that there is game time being shared around with that defensive quartet to make sure that, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I read Tim's article about whether or not David Luiz might get another deal. And I think, you know, I think the stars are aligning for him to get another deal. I just get the feeling that Arteta wants to give him one. And this run of games at the moment might be part of that process of just trying to get it over the line.
There's a head and heart thing going on there for me, you know, a head and maybe gut My gut says, no, I can't take any more. Yeah. And my head sort of sees where Tim's argument is, you know, it's well thought out and it makes sense. But then there's that sort of feeling in the pit of your stomach about...
It's the four Saturdays that he ruins in your year.
Yeah.
You can't get over, right?
Like, in fairness, I think he's been better this season than he was in his first season. Part of his first season, though, was that, like, you know...
The Emery free-for-all.
Yeah, exactly. Where he went, fuck that guy. And, like, he was the most obvious example of, like, no. I'm not having this guy at all. And where you stand on that is another question, you know. Should he be more professional and just do the best that he can? But, you know, he still managed to pick up penalties and red cards under Arteta as well. You know, I don't know. I worry that, look, if he stays for another year and he's not someone we're relying on, I could probably just about live with it. But if he's staying to be anything close to a regular first choice player, I'm just not convinced that that his legs will do it.
At some point, we have to move on.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah. This summer would be good. But anyway, that's it. let's mention Kieran Tierney. Did you enjoy his on the mic slot that they do on Arsenal.com? Like, I know this is not something they're going to be able to do when crowds are back in the stadium, and we all want crowds and fans to be back in the stadium. But if you can find some new and interesting ways to produce hashtag content during the pandemic and the absence of fans, you know, there was one with Matt Ryan, wasn't there, in the game that he played?
Yeah.
What was that? That was the Villa game?
Yeah, the Villa game when it was his debut and we lost.
And he conceded inside the first 2 minutes, which wasn't his fault, just let me say that. But it was quite an interesting video, and I thought the Tierney one was interesting as well, with subtitles, you know, because, of course, you can't understand what players are saying. It's nothing to do with his broad Scottish accent.
There was one subtitle where they definitely missed out the fucking, like,
yeah,
you know.
They did. They bleeped him.
They just sort of...
And they even did like the scrambly bit over his mouth stuff. You know, I guess it's a football club. They've got to produce like wholesome family content for everyone to sit down and watch on YouTube and what have you. You know,
No, but it is interesting because really it's no different to you or I playing five-a-side and kind of screaming at your teammates and being huffed off when they mess up, or you know, calling for passes that don't come your way, or being pissed off when
players don't make
runs in front of you, or trying to explain away your own mistakes because you know you've made a bad pass. It is good quality content. I think the Arsenal media team do really well at kind of mixing things up and trying new things, so kudos to them. But who wouldn't want to play with Kieran Tierney? He's just fantastic. You just watch him. He just gives everything all the time. He's always running. And you know, technically, he's just really, really tight. You know, really tight. I do think that, you know, if he, you know, if Aubameyang moves on in a couple of years' time and he's still there, he really would be for me a proper candidate for the captaincy.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we forget he's still only 23. You know, he's young. And you know, he's still developing as a player, and he's hugely experienced because of all the football that he played at Celtic as well. So yeah, look, you know, if he can continue to stay fit, if we can help him to continue to stay fit by, you know, signing an actual backup left back or somebody to, you know, provide some cover for him in certain games, that would be useful too, because you know, he is really important, and there are going to be games where the aches or the strains or the niggles or whatever it might be, you know, require him to sit down, and we can't do that at the moment. That's the thing. I mean, we can play Cedric there, and he did okay. I think that's fine, but, you know, you miss something when you don't have a natural left back in that position. So, fingers crossed. Just very finally, you know, there is an interlull after the West Ham game. The schedule this season, the workload, the amount of football that players are playing in a really short period of time is huge. So for some countries to be playing three games in this 2 weeks feels absolutely absurd, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty mad when you can see that the season is going to end and then we're just going to roll straight into the Euros as well. Mm. And I'm assuming that there may even be some friendlies before that to, you know, squeeze in because teams tend to have a little bit of prep. It's pretty mad. I mean, in the case of Emil Smith Rowe, what they've done with the under 21 European Championships is they've actually split the summer's tournament into two different bits. So they're going to play the group stage. So three games of the group stages are going to be played in the interlull that's coming up. And then the group stages will end and then the teams will play the second half of the tournament in the summer. So that's why they're packing in three games at under 21 level. I think that's Hungary and Slovenia.
Yeah.
One of the two. Apologies for not knowing which one.
We should get that right.
So that's why the 21 levels.
No, go.
Oh, you've just broken up there.
Sorry, you go ahead.
That's why the under 21s are kind of having all those games packed in. But the idea that you in the middle, the pandemic is still ongoing and I understand that they want to play as many games as possible, the international teams, because they haven't had that many opportunities. But it is absolutely mad assuming that players are going to travel all around Europe at this point when, you know, be patient, you know, just be patient, bide your time. You'll get your international football. But I guess it's all about money.
And TV contracts and things like that, I guess.
Yeah. It's mad because the appetite is not there for these games from a supporter point of view.
Well, that's it.
I don't know anyone who particularly needs to kind of sit down and watch some World Cup qualifiers 18 months in advance right now.
I think you're right. If you were to say to people, look, because everything has been so weird and surreal and since the lockdown, you know, and football restarted last June? You know, it feels like there's kind of been no break whatsoever. And I know we've been used to the football calendar getting condensed and everything else, but now because of the proliferation of games, the way they're scheduling them for TV, because all the games are on TV, so you've got a game every night of the week, basically, you know, it's fucked with our internal calendars, if you like, about when football is supposed to be on and when it's supposed to be played. I guarantee you that even the most fervent fans of international football, if you said to them, you can have a 2 month break from football and we can just start again later in the year. And hopefully at that point, people will be vaccinated and people will be able to get back into stadiums and football can become more of the experience that we've all grown up with and been used to rather than this sort of facsimile of what it is. I think most people would say, yeah, give me a couple of months off, I'll recharge my football batteries, and we'll just fucking dive headfirst into it again, and it should be good again. Instead, we're going to have these tournaments that feel kind of just pointless. Like, who gives a fuck?
I think there's a debate raging, because I think Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, has basically said that the countries that are hosting this upcoming Euros, which I think is spread over 12 countries, he's basically demanding that all of those countries be allowed to have at least some fans in the stadium, which, I mean, if you're not ready, you're not ready. So I don't know what he's going to do, just pull them and put them somewhere where they are willing to take those risks. I mean, it's really weird. I mean he's obviously keen to keep the product pure and have fans there in some way, shape or form, because the TV audiences will go up as a consequence because people will just be more interested in something that isn't played against backdrops of empty stands. But more arguments brewing and obviously again, money at the heart of it all.
The idea of playing the European Championships in 12 different countries and whatever many different cities was like shit in the first place. It really was. It was
Platini's idea.
Yeah, it was a terrible idea and remains a terrible idea, but now has diminished to the point where, I don't know, what's the worst, the cherry coke of football tournaments? I can't remember. Like, just the worst ideas that people have ever had. It's right up there with that. Like, I mean, of course, nobody could foresee a pandemic, but like, you can react to what's going on. You can see what's happening now and adjust and make different plans. And like, if there's going to be no fucking fans anyway, Jesus.
Well, the funny thing is that they did react last season and did exactly the opposite of what they are desperate to do this summer. So they moved, you know, the Champions League and the Europa League to single venues and had all of the games played in a mini tournament style. And everybody was really into it. And it's something that they're thinking about doing in the future. But for some reason, they seem absolutely desperate to continue playing this particular Euros in the 12 countries that it was originally destined for. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some kind of like insurance thing going on. I don't know what's going on, but it does seem kind of mad that it, and very counterintuitive.
Well, look, that's something we'll have to deal with during the summer. And, you know, hopefully, like, fingers crossed for everybody saying things are improving by that point. But, you know, at the moment, it's very difficult to convince anyone that, that players across Europe, with the current restrictions, with the current problems, with the current risks, are going to fly and travel and mingle and then play three games. And, you know, maybe part of the reason why I think this season will be, I'm not saying it's going to be forgettable just from our point of view because it hasn't gone as well as we would like. I just think in general terms, it's been a really low quality season for really obvious reasons. And much of that is down to what's being asked of the players. And it's not going to get any better between now and May or whenever the fuck this season ends, you know?
Yeah, everything has an asterisk next to it, doesn't it?
It does. It does. All right. Well, look, we will leave it there for now. As ever, great to talk to you, Andrew. And thank you for being here post-game to enjoy the Tottenham fun and to, you know, put the Arsenal stuff in perspective as well. Yeah, that's it. I'm normally much better at closing out these things. I've made an absolute bollocks of this. So, Andrew Allen, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's late at night, man. What can we do?
Yeah, it really is.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter. He is at @AAllensport, @AAllensport. And if you'd like some more Andrew podcast goodness in your ears, just check out the Left Field podcast, of which he is the co-host. Lots of football chat and other sporting chat in there as well. Left Field podcast. Look it up in your favorite podcasting app. Right. Not a lot left to say this evening, other than we are continuing to be amused by what happened to Tottenham.
Jose, please tell us, how has that happened? Happened tonight?
Good question.
Hmm. What could it be? Maybe one day we will find out the answer. We have got a game against West Ham on Sunday before we go into the interlull, a big game. We will preview that for you in podcast form for Patreon members. We'll have that out for you tomorrow evening. Well, this evening, no. Well, it depends. Well, it's tomorrow evening now, but when you're listening to this, probably it is Friday. So we will have that out Friday evening. We'll look ahead to the West Ham game, what we might do, and all the rest. There might even be some ancillary laughing at Tottenham in that podcast, too. I mean, you cannot look a gift horse in the mouth, as the old saying goes. Can't pass up these opportunities. As ever, I just want to say thank you very much indeed for being here, for listening, for subscribing, for everything. I hope everyone out there is doing okay. I hope you're well. I hope you stay well. Look after yourselves and all the rest. It's all still a bit weird out there. So, you know, be careful, be sensible and everything else. Again, for all the people who've been in touch over the last few weeks, it's been amazing. It's really, really helped. It has really, really helped. And, you know, it helps when Arsenal win games and qualify for things and, you know, don't make us all angry as well. But you guys have been a huge, huge comfort during what has been a difficult time and remains a difficult time. But I'm enjoying being back at work and I'm enjoying talking to you guys on these things and everywhere else. So look, mind yourselves. James and I will be here on Monday to talk about what happens in the West Ham game. We will have a lot of interlull content for you as well, you know, to try and help everybody through a couple of Arsenal-free weeks, even though that might not be the worst thing in the world for some people. But we'll do our best for you. So until the next one, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Josie, sook my big round Gunasaurus Borgia Glaikic. Harry, aye, you fucker. Harry, shut it, you fucking bampot. That Gareth Bale is fucking boofing, man. Ah, get it up, your bum's out the fucking window. Well done, Pepe. Well done, you absolute roaster. That dauber tried to break my fucking jaw. Fucking hell, he's hit the post. A big job, he's missed it. For fuck's sake, man, that was a ball here away if you're going in. Harry, your da sells Avon, you c-
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.